Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and do yourself a favor and fall flat on your face. This advice may seem counterintuitive, but Reshma Sarjani, founder and CEO of Girls Who Code, believes abandoning perfectionism and having the courage to fail will set you free. And here's the gender piece. She says that while society encourages boys to speak up and play rough, girls are taught to be polite and careful to shun risky behavior. Her new book, inspired by her hugely popular TED Talk, is called Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder. Hi, Reshma. Congratulations on the book and becoming, even after Girls Who Code, which is changing the world, a hit on TED. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Let's start with a story. You write in the book about an experiment involving salty lemonade. Tell us about that.
So basically, a couple of researchers did an experiment with boys and girls, you know, ages, you know, 4, 5, 6. And they had them try lemonade, and they spiked the lemonade with salt instead of sugar. So when the boys drank the lemonade, they're like, ew, this is gross, yuck. And they had no problem telling, you know, the researchers that it just didn't taste good. The girls drank it down, gulped it up, said, yummy, this tastes good. They didn't want to hurt the researchers' feelings. Mm. And so it was a great example, you know, in the research, they talk about it in terms of empathy, but it's also, for me, it's a great example of perfectionism and this kind of toxic people pleasing. As girls, we're kind of taught to put other people's feelings before ours, and we can't even tell them when the lemonade is salty.
So this tendency in girls to want to please starts at a young age. What are the ways that some parents may be listening right now and horrified by that story and asking themselves, uh-oh, am I doing this subconsciously without even realizing it? Because there's probably nobody listening who says, yeah, I want to raise my girls to please and not take the same risks as boys. How are people breeding this behavior without realizing it?
I mean, I think sit at the playground and you'll see parents of daughters be like, be careful, honey. Don't get your dress wet. You know what I mean? Don't take that toy away from somebody. Whereas they just let their sons kind of climb high and just jump. So I would say, you know, we got to stop coddling and protecting our girls, kind of wrapping them up with, you know, bubble wrap. You know, let them get dirty. Let them feel what it's like to just, to you know, quite frankly, get hurt. You know, the second thing I say is, like, if your daughter's in gymnastics and she can't do a cartwheel, don't pull her out and, you know, put her into swimming. Let her know what it's like to feel mediocre, to just be okay at something, or to just, quote, not be good at something. You know, we're not building resiliency with girls because we're spending way too much time thinking about protecting them or thinking that by making them not fail, we're building their confidence. And I just think that that's false.
So listeners, is this ringing a bell for you? Do you have any stories about being a girl, now being a woman, looking back at maybe you were trained to please and take fewer risks than boys, to your detriment as a grown-up or parents? Who wants to tell a story or ask a question of Reshma Sarjani, best known as the founder of Girls Who Code, now the author of Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I'm going to flip the script on you a little bit because we had a segment recently about how women financial advisors are more successful on average for their clients than men in the field. And you know what the reason was? It was largely because male financial advisors take too many risks. They're going for the big score in the stock market too much, whereas the women financial advisors were more likely to advise their clients, you know, steady as you go, diversify, and their clients did better over time. Did you happen to hear about that?
Yeah, I did. And people always say if Lehman Brothers was Lehman Sisters, right, we wouldn't have had the financial crisis. And I think that there's some truth to that. There are places where, you know, slow and steady kind of wins the race. What I'm more worried about, Brian, is, you know, that statistic where you show that, you know, women will apply for a job only if they meet 100% of the qualifications, and men will apply when they meet 60% of the qualifications. You know, we are taking ourselves out of the game. You know, we're missing out on opportunities because we think that they're riskier, or we think that we can't do them, quote, perfectly. And that's the behavioral change that, you know, I want to see. I know there's a study that shows that, you know, young women, when they decide on a major, if they take the introductory class and they get a B instead of an A, they drop out. Whereas men are like, I got a B. That's amazing. So perfectionism, I think, in many ways is holding women back from their truest potential.
You also tell a story in the book about your friend Erica,
yeah,
and her experience during high school and then out in the real world. You want to tell Erica's story?
Yeah, I mean, Erica, and a lot of parents can kind of relate with this. You know, Erica, in many ways, did everything right. Made all the volunteer opportunities she was supposed to do, you know, was a straight A, you know, student. And then the older she got, she continued to exhibit this behavior, but she wasn't happy and she wasn't able to tell the world, you know, what she really wanted to do. You know, far too often, you know, we stay in opportunities. We, you know, will continue to be the club of a president of an organization because we're good at it, not because we enjoy it.
Grace in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Reshma Sarjani. Hi, Grace.
Hi, how are you? Very fascinating topic, and I believe for women it goes every way. As I told the screener, I'm 60 tall now and have been since I'm 13 years old. So you can imagine how tall I was. But I was always told for a woman when I was a kid, you're too tall. And I didn't know what too tall meant, but I got the point. One boy told me it's going to be hard for you to get married. And as I said, I'm 60, over 60. And the other thing was I wanted to go into medicine because I had a chronic illness when I was a kid. And I was talking to my doctor, and he was like, yeah, women shouldn't go into medicine. It's too hard for them. They should be nurses. It's better for you. So there's been a lot of those very slow it down, don't do it situations.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that we, you know, we expect girls to kind of fill into that mode. You know, I talk about in the book how polished equals perfect, right? And that you have to look and feel a certain way. I mean, social media has been horrible in many ways for kind of girls' confidences. You know, my niece, for example, you know, if she doesn't get 500 likes on an Instagram post, she deletes the memory. And so, and the other point I think about you can't do stuff is, you know, far too often we tell our girls, well, that field is not for you. You know, I see this happen in technology, like computer scientists are men, are boys. You know, you can't do that.
Brianna in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Brianna.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you for making it.
It's a pleasure. I wanted to add a story, especially to contextualize the idea that mothers and other figures paint the world as a dangerous place for women, specifically in sport.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote my undergraduate philosophy thesis on the relationship between women and risk in action sport, and I myself just completed a solo bike tour across France for about 4 months.
Yes.
Wow.
So the phenomenon that I encountered was anyone who stopped me out of curiosity or for whatever reason and asked me if I was all alone, then asked me, aren't you afraid? Or isn't this dangerous? Or my favorite one was, what does your boyfriend think about this?
Hmm.
So that was a specifically female phenomenon I found, because when I asked my male friends who have done the same thing, that wasn't their experience, they said, people asked you, are you all alone? And then they said, oh, that's so brave of you, good for you.
Yeah, it's true. Like, we really reward certain behavior for young women. And it starts such at a young age with this idea that we have to protect and that we have to coddle. And it's funny, it also extends into us thinking that what we're good at and what we're bad at. I know so many men who play basketball or golf, and they're horrible at it. Can't even get the ball into the shot, right? But they like it, so they keep doing it. I've asked my girlfriends, do any of you have a hobby that you just like, but you're not that good at? And they're like, no way. I mean, I know women who won't take a fitness class until they're, quote, fit.
No, very much. I'm also a snowboard instructor, and I'm very passionate about women's participation in action sports. And what I find is women really need to create a community for themselves where they feel safe, to fail, versus the idea often from observation and whatnot that men in a freestyle environment go, oh yeah, I can do this. If I fall, all right, respect for me.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. I mean, that's why I started Girls Who Code in a single sex environment, right? Where they felt like I could get the code wrong, you know what I mean? And then I could have girls basically support me and I could do it again without any judgment that's coming from other boys or even that voice that's in my head.
Brianna, thank you. And I think we're even seeing this in politics. Mm. And I know you pay attention to politics too, that, you know, the male archetype is sort of the hero's journey, the individual who goes out and conquers. And the women's archetype is the community's journey.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that in the new Congress.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you're not allowed to be ambitious still. And even though you have all these amazing women running for Congress, I thought it was powerful that you heard Kamala Harris say in her speech, I am not perfect. You know, you've immediately had many of these presidential contenders basically apologizing for past, you know, positions, because women are penalized in many ways for not being perfect. It's hard still. And I think, though, so much of what I want to see is you're seeing bravery on the big stage. I want to see everyday bravery. You know, women who have the courage. I mean, when you're walking down the street and someone pushes you and you say, I'm sorry, to stop doing that, right? When you're a job that you feel like, about, that you have the courage to walk away. When you're a mom who needs to work out more to get rid of the baby weight, that you feel like you can go do that at 7:30, even though the dog wants to go out and the baby's waking up. Like, it's that everyday courage that we need to see.
This raft of apologies. We got one from Elizabeth Warren.
Yes.
We got one from Kamala Harris, as you say. We got one from Kirsten Gillibrand about some things in her past.
Got some from Tulsi Gabbard, all of them.
And they're all getting knocked for it to some degree. But another way to look at it is, who's the last male politician who you can think of who ever made a public apology, right? There should be pride, not necessarily shame, in being able to apologize.
Exactly, and to be authentic about your positions. But we don't expect it from men.
Zach in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Father of a four-year-old, right, Zach?
That's right. Yeah, I have a four-year-old daughter, and she's crazy and amazing. But one of the things that I notice a lot on this topic is when we're at the playground, I see so many more parents with boys, you know, if the boy falls off something, being like, hey, you're okay, get back up and try it again. And with girls, they're either not even letting them do it in the first place, or there's so much more be careful or don't do that.
So
or when they do fall, then it's like, see, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And I see, I don't try not to do that with my daughter, and it's hard to see it with so many people all the time.
Do you find,
even realize they're doing it.
Do you find yourself having to catch yourself? It sounds like you're really aware of this dynamic, but even catching yourself trying to protect your daughter from the same things that the father of a four-year-old boy wouldn't be protecting him from?
I think my wife and I were pretty conscious about talking about that early on, so I don't know if I would have done that naturally, but we try really hard, even with not using the word careful, but just saying like, hey, watch where you're going or keep your eye on that instead of be careful. Because I don't want her to be worried like the world is some scary thing to, even though it is.
And it's hard.
You know,
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, my husband, who's a total feminist, we got in this fight about the nightlight. My son, who's four, decided he needed a nightlight. And, you know, I'd walk up the stairs, I'd put him in his crib, you know, I'd put on the nightlight, close my door. My husband would walk up, you know, 10 minutes later and shut off the nightlight. Sean would scream. We would do this dance. And
right.
I said, Nahal, why are you shutting off the nightlight? And he says, well, I want him to be strong. I want him to be tough. And I said, listen, if Sean was a girl, would you let him have the nightlight? And he thought about it and he goes, oh my God, I would. So it's true. Like, we have the best of intentions, but we really, really, because it has real consequences for when they get older, because they become addicted to this kind of coddling and protection, and then they become afraid to take risks, and they end up either depressed or in jobs or in opportunities that they don't like.
Thanks for your call, Zach. We really appreciate it. My guest is Reshma Sawjani, best known as the founder and CEO of the group Girls Who Code, which you can figure out what that is just from the name if you don't already know. She also had this hugely popular TED Talk recently, which has now been adapted into a book, and it's Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Bolder. And that sounds like advice for everybody against perfectionism and being willing to fail. But there's a very strong gender piece in how girls are given less leeway to take risks, and it comes back to haunt in adulthood. Dorothea in Queens, you're on WNYC with Reshma Sarjani. Hi, Dorothea.
Hi, good morning. I'm very happy to be on the show. I didn't think I would ever do this, but I had to.
That's
because
all our
so
first time
callers.
I had to because I grew up with brothers, so I'm totally not like all the women that I'm listening, that you're talking about, because I did everything. I was always at the top of my class. I was always chosen in my positions for the manager position, because I didn't behave like a girl. And I just went after everything. I didn't think that was not allowed. The price I paid was the non-acceptance of females. Mm-hmm. You see, you get the opposite result. So while I was very successful and very happy with the jobs I did and the places I went, the females kind of ostracized me, if you wish to put it that way. Not as extreme as that, but there was some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I totally hear what you're saying, because it's hard to be brave, and it's not what society is expecting. And so that's why this book really calls for a bravery revolution. So you don't seem like you're unusual, right? In the things that you were doing and what
no,
you were going after.
No, I don't feel
after.
Unusual.
Yeah.
I feel normal.
Exactly.
But they feel I'm unusual, and I'm not normal. And you like male movies and, you know, all of those things. And I said, what? I like both. Mm-hmm. I'm not into rom-coms, but, but I'll go to the most adventurous, read science fiction, et cetera, et cetera. It's fun.
Yeah.
That's what they're keeping from us. It's fun.
Yeah, exactly. I think bravery is fun, too, and I think it brings you joy. And you don't have regrets in your life. I mean, so many of us like miss opportunities, and we let our ideas die in the vine, and we see other people doing the things that we wanted to do, and we're full of so much regret and envy. And I think that's so much of what, you know, happens amongst us as women in our relationships. And I think that when you take that away, when you see women kind of going for their biggest dreams and goals, you end up with a sisterhood, a community of women who are lifting each other up.
Greg in Westchester, you're on WNYC, and Dorothea, don't make that the last time. Call us again. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Brian, big fan. I wonder, so let me start this with the premise that I'm raising three girls, hopefully as best I can, to be brave and independent. But I wonder what your guest thoughts are on the notion that if we transferred some of our what we do to raise girls to be empathetic to raising boys, whether that might address some of the gender inequality and some of the issues we've seen in recent years in Me Too and whatnot.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I have a 4-year-old son, and when I was having a boy, I cried because it was so off-brand. But, you know, you get exactly what you deserve. And I've learned so much about this, I think, in raising him. And, you know, I'm raising him to be empathetic and kind. You know, he comes with me everywhere and he sees kind of women leading. So this isn't just about girls being brave, but it's also about raising our children to be who they are and what their true, you know what I mean, like nature is.
Greg, thank you. This is one of my big things too, as a man interested in feminism, that we spend so much energy telling girls that they're allowed to do things that boys and men used to only be allowed to do, and that's good.
Yeah.
But not enough still, in my opinion, telling boys that it's okay to do things that are associated with girls.
1,000%. I mean, that's what, look, I wrote this book too, Brian, because I think that male allies are so critical to raising, you know, having a bravery movement, right? And having men be a part of this, whether it is being thoughtful in terms of like how they're raising our girls, whether it is being supportive allies. You know, one of my favorite things that happened to me last year was I was visiting the Rochester Institute of Technology, and I was speaking to the Women in Computing group. And there are these four young men that were in the room. And I was like, who are you? And they're like, we're the men who are supporting the Women in Computing group. Like, they had formed a club, right?
That's great. The men's auxiliary.
Yes, to support women. And so I think that we're living this really powerful moment where men are so critical to this movement.
What should we be changing in elementary school classrooms? Do you have any tips for teachers?
Yes. I mean, I think that we have to, like, to me, it's important to get girls to get technical as quickly as we can, whether it's making or breaking things, whether it's learning how to code. I mean, what I love about coding is, like, the whole process is a process of imperfection, right? The semicolon's in the wrong place. You have to do it again over and over again. And many girls think that they can't do something. I think, secondly, getting girls in front of, you know, technical subjects, whether that's math and science, and not letting them say, I can't do this, I'm not good at it. You know, making that distinction between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset, I think is really, really important.
Let's get one more call in here on your larger theme of being okay to fail. Katie in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Katie.
Oh, hey, guys.
Hey.
So this topic, failure, is something that I've thought a lot about because my work in technology and strategy is a lot about failing. And it's something I've always had a pretty good relationship with for the most part. I expect it. I kind of wait for it and I find it valuable in the work. And I've always been curious, like, especially when people started talking about, you know, fail first, fail big to succeed or whatever. And I really think that I can chalk that up to alone time growing up. I had a lot of alone time, and I loved my alone time to just do weird things, you know, take things apart, tinker and play, and, you know, just see how things worked, see what else could go in my Easy Bake Oven. And I think in that time, you're not a girl in the world. You're not bad at math. You're not what anybody else, you know, without anybody else there to judge you, you have this sort of space to yourself to sort of grow into that and become comfortable.
I love this.
I love that too.
I'm a big fan of alone time myself.
But yes, because it's so much about not having the judgment of others. And that's what starts happening right around 8 years old. Right when we start grading kids, we start basically putting them into boxes and we start caring about what other people think. And I think when you're alone, you get to kind of live your own possibility and fail by yourself. Right? Without feeling like you're being judged.
And alone time can be a time for decompression, but it can also be a time for great creativity.
I certainly feel like, to me, when I'm like out there running, you know what I mean, on the West Side, like my alone time, I do my best thinking.
And then get out there and work in teams.
Exactly.
Reshma Sawjani, her new book, based on her hugely popular TED Talk, is called Brave, Not Perfect, Fear Less, Fail More, and Live Boulder. Obviously, from our caller board, you've inspired so many people. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks, Brian.